Saji Hamid, are you still there?
Oh, yes, I'm here. Can you see me?
Yes, we can see you and we can hear you. I'm really sorry that we're so far behind, but I hope it's at least interesting enough for you to wait in line, so to speak.
No problem, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Well, tell us who you are and what you're doing.
Well, my name is Saji. I'm a climate scientist.
Mm-hmm.
So I work on things like El Nino. And I'm settled in Japan. I've been here for 10 years now. Before that, I worked in the US and Korea. So that's all I have to say about myself. So, Rainer, do you speak Japanese? I know that you worked in Japan.
A little. I'm going to try it out in a little while. But I do speak a little Japanese. I had, when I was working for Deutsche Bank in Tokyo, we had private Japanese lessons. And I kind of liked that. 私は東京電機の弁護士です。
なるほど。
But it's not true. I just lied. I just said, I am the lawyer of the Tokyo Bank. Okay, go ahead.
よろしくお願いします。So should I, I have a presentation, so should I share it? And,
yes, please.
Mm-hmm. And you can kind of, interrupt me, how long should I, what time?
Well,
how frame should I?
What's on your wish list? I mean, is it between 10 and 15 minutes? If that's the case, that's fine. If it's a half an hour.
Yeah, I could do that. Yeah.
Okay, great. Please. Yeah. Go
ahead. Basically, I'm going to look at the Indian and Japanese situation kind of together.
That's exactly what we were looking for. In particular, India, because there's so many rumors out there and so much false information. Maybe you can correct some of this.
Yeah. Okay. So let me share. Sorry, my voice is a bit out today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you see me?
We can see that picture.
So this is what I want to show about my work. So you probably know about this. 2 years ago, there was a big bushfire in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably don't know, okay? So this is because something like the El Nino, it's called the Indian Ocean Dipole. So this is a work which I've worked on. So this is kind of my work. So that's my brief introduction to myself. So I want to kind of, I totally agree with you that the PCR test and especially asymptomatic infections, this is kind of very, very crazy idea that, people would have asymptomatic infections. So that's, I think, should be the key legal argument, because that's the thing we have to attack.
Mm-hmm.
But there is bigger issues. As one of your speakers a few sessions ago talked about the international health regulations.
Yes.
So this is what is causing governments to kind of act. They're legally bound to do all the measures, at least part of them.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have to look carefully at contagion, like, is because contagion has been historically used to justify quarantines and tyranny, starting from 17th century or even before. And so the science, as you had a discussion before, science is also basically a bit corrupted because scientists are too busy and it's too specialized. So they don't have time to critically think. So there is some issues with contagion, and I'm very pleased that in Germany, you have people like Stefan Lange, who is kind of critically looking at this. And finally, you have, as you mentioned, we have this big corporation stuff. And so we need to go back to small is beautiful.
Very
and
good.
Decentralization. Very good. But I'm not going to touch on all of those. I'm going to look at the PCR test. Sorry for my voice. It's kind of... So essentially, I would like to look at the data, basically. That's where I'm comfortable, and to point to some noteworthy news items too. And I hope I can convince, I can provide a justification. There is some inconsistencies, and maybe explain why there is an Indian spike So essentially what I'm doing here is to look, so if you look at this graph, so these are the PCR labeled deaths from different countries. At the bottom is China, which is not showing anything. So nobody has died in China after, you know, it started. And so currently our interest is in India. So India is that blue line, you see that primary
port. Not much going on there.
Exactly. And I provide some baselines. So all these are kind of normalized in terms of deaths per 100,000 people. So all the countries are on par. So big countries, you know, would not show up, you know, extraordinary stuff. And two baselines I use are, one is the deaths, because I know Japan data, it's people, suicides are kind of maybe big in Japan. It's like 15 per 100,000 people. So the city I live in has about 100,000 people. So it's like 15 people per year. The other one is the deaths from pneumonia, because pneumonia is kind of, we say that COVID is pneumonia, atypical pneumonia. So these are my baselines to compare. And so those are shown as the dashed line and the solid line. And you can see India is basically nothing. But if you look at Germany or Sweden or USA, you think that something really is happening, because it's kind of way beyond what you see in Asia. So I want to point out that actually this is seems to be a fake, because because if you look at the all cause excess mortality, this I took from Carl Hennigan from Oxford. So they looked at the humans. So you see that Sweden is 1.5%. Let's look at Sweden, because they didn't do anything especially compared to other countries. So if this were true, we would expect about 6% of excess mortality. But we only see 1.5%, despite, you know, having this big rise. Big rise compared to pneumonia. Normally you have only 75. It's like going 120. So we don't have, so it's not consistent. But there's a trick. The excess mortality is kind of a wrong. It's defined as the five-year average, and you go beyond that. But that is not applicable to many countries in Europe or Japan, because it's developed countries and you have controlled mortality. So people live longer. And so the death rate has an upward trend. So it's going up every year. And so if you take a five-year average, your last 2 years are always going to be above normal. So it's like people talking about climate change. They'll always say this year is warmer than, you know, previous years. So it's that kind of trick. So to give an example, in Japan, there is always 20,000 more people dying compared to the previous year. So we have to take this into account.
You mean every year?
Every year, yes, 20,000.
So there's an increase by 20,000 every year.
And this is true for most European countries. So in this sense, this excess mortality is kind of misleading. It's overestimated.
And why is this? Is this because of like old age population, or what's the reason for this?
Because of old age. It's because everything is, you know, you have a good medical system, so people tend to live longer, but with disease. So, so the old population gets bigger compared to. So in fact, in Japan, although, you know, we had, we're supposed to have COVID for 1 year, the death rates are lower. So the blue line is for 2020, it's early part, and 2019 is the dark line. Normally we would expect, because of the trend, this to be 20,000 more. So we haven't even reached that. So it's extremely low. So that's one point. So the deaths are lower, not only in Japan, but also in most countries. And it doesn't square well with that, the report that millions of people have died from a new disease. And it's there's a new pathogen going around. So this is definitely very strange. But there are actually big deaths in certain parts of the world. And as Michael was talking about Belgium case, this needs careful investigations. This is New York. Mm-hmm. And most of the lines are for 5 years. So if you take 5 years, you can see kind of how they vary. And the big spike is for 2020, just around April. And that one should not happen naturally. Naturally, you would have like a standard deviation, two standard deviation, or a little bit, 10%, you know, 20%. Mm-hmm. But this is way up. So this kind of things are, you know, need special investigation. But
we've spoken to some people from New York and from the United States, and there is some evidence that much of this can be attributed to medical malpractice, overdosing, overdosing hydroxychloroquine, too much, too many people were put on a respirator, but also because of the panic. We assume, and the people who we spoke to assume, that many people who would have normally stayed at home and tried to get through and over a flu for 5, 6, 7 days, many of them went to the hospitals, and that's what killed them, basically.
Yeah. So basically, this is happening in India now too. Mm-hmm. They should. These are self-limiting diseases, but they go to the hospital and get.
Can I say something about this matter? Very short.
Yeah.
There is a very interesting study of Professor Toussaint in France, who is explaining this thing, and this is what we also saw in New York, because they had triple as much young people laying in their hospitals because of the fact that they also have triple as much obese people, people with obese and with illnesses like diabetes and other illnesses. Mm-hmm. So this is why there is a big peak in New York City, because of these people laying there. So that's an important point. Second, what Reiner says is very true. The collateral damage is also included in these kinds of figures. And you must know that in Belgium, we have very little heart attacks during the corona crisis. That's not real, of course, but these people are considered as coronas because they had pain on the chest and they couldn't breathe much. And they are considered as coronas. They're not treated and they're dead. So that's why you have such a high figures. The cardiovascular patients are also in there. For example.
Yeah, okay.
These are nursing homes, so obese people don't go there. Mm-hmm. These deaths mostly happen in nursing homes. Mm-hmm. So, there are two factors. One is the PCR testing trends. I think you know most of this. And the other one is like mislabeling seasonal trends. So I want to kind of show some kind of evidence for the two of these. So the first, we know that the testing tests are increasing, just like this one. So this is from Tokyo. And the red one is the PCR test being conducted. Mm-hmm. And the blue line is the PCR negative. So they're testing people, but most of them are turning out to be negative. And if you look at the PCR positive, they're always a very, very tiny fraction. Mm-hmm. There's one more reason why there's so many negatives which are close to. That's because they're testing asymptomatic people. People really don't have anything, but they're getting tested. Same thing in Delhi. So Delhi, if you look, so in this case, I kind of labeled it as quarantined by positive PCR. So the red line is the positive PCR, and the blue line is, you know, the number of people who were released, mm-hmm. you know, after keeping them for maybe 1 week because they didn't have any symptoms. And here also you can see the graph is really going up, but the positives are mostly from just testing. They're just increasing the testing. Or people are going there for more testing, one of those. But there is nothing really happening because people, they stay for 10 days and, you know, and they don't develop any symptoms. And so recently, Professor Fenton from Oxford, from Queen's London University, he also showed something with the kind of data of the medical services receiving 9/11 calls or those kind of stuff. And there's a big disparity between these calls, which would show that people are really kind of calling in and feeling sick, and the test numbers. So these test numbers are meaningless. This PCR test is the basic problem. Mm-hmm. And the cases are just increasing because they are increasing the case numbers. Mm-hmm. But let's assume that what is happening is not a case pandemic, but it's a real pandemic. So here is what I want to show, something really interesting, not from data, but from real people. And what's happening in India is, since November 20, farmers have been protesting because the Indian government wants to kind of privatize the farming sector, the food sector. Uh-huh. And so these people have been going on since November 20. And this is the crowd. It's like huge crowds, mm-hmm. women, mm-hmm. children, and they're all together. And there is no protection. And they are right beside Delhi. So mm-hmm. Delhi is the place where we hear all the news. People are dying with, lack of oxygen. But surprisingly, the virus has kind of forgotten them. So this is a real evidence that what is happening is a pandemic, not a real...
But the figures are false then. So this looks like, intentional misinformation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It is. It is, yeah. I mean, otherwise, how would you implement a PCR test without, validating it? Yes. It's intentionally done. Yeah.
Despite the fact that the PCR test has never ever been approved for diagnostic purposes, but only for scientific purposes. This is a real, I'm not going to say miracle, but it's insanity that this has ever happened just because one person, Drosten, came up with the idea that he's going to invent a test to identify infections, when everybody should know. Even dentists, because they use PCR tests as well, everybody should know that they cannot do this. This is insanity. That's why I'm saying, unlike Michael, that this is intentional and this is not in good faith. But go ahead.
Yes. So another one is, this is the poster child of India's new variant, that there was this religious festival where Hindu pilgrims go to the Ganga. That's Ganges, and they dip. And so there's data, there's 9 million people went between January to April, 4 months. And the typical scene is like this. And this is not fake, because many of the pilgrims are wearing masks. So a few of them, not many. Mm-hmm. What is interesting, so now let's look at to see, if this big gathering had any impact on, especially since they went on March 11, we think that this thing incubates for 2 weeks and then, and then 1% of people will die. Mm-hmm. But what you see is that the state is called Uttarakhand. It's about 10 million population. I think it's similar to Sweden. Mm-hmm. But with the population density of Uganda, and so these lines, the vertical lines, are the different timelines, 3.2 million on March 11. You can see that after a month, there is nothing much happening. Mm-hmm. The deaths are flat. These are total curves. So if they remain flat, there's no new case, nor there is any new infection. The only rise you see is starting about April 14th, so recently. But this rise is not unique to this place, Uttarakhand, where the pilgrims were there. This happens pretty much all over India. It happens in Delhi, of course. And so this is used to justify the scaremongering that it was this event which led to a huge rise, because they compare 3.5 million people went on April 12th. They kind of conveniently don't say about the March 11th. They talk about April 12th, and this led to the huge spike in the cases. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is that it's not only in Delhi. This spike in a slower rate is seen in other states. And what's more interesting is that this state is very tiny, and you can see it has a very sharp spike around that time. So why is this state important? It's kind of in a remote island, away from the west coast of India. So it's a very beautiful island. But you know, the population is 97% Muslim, and they are definitely not going to go to Kumbh Mela. And so this kind of highlights that. And it's a very difficult island to get into. You know, I'm from southern India, and this is kind of, you know, this maybe for compared to other Indians, this is close to me. But I need to have a special pass. I have to get either on a ferry or an airplane to get to this island. And most people don't do that. So mm-hmm. It's very difficult to get. But they have the same kind of spike. So this virus, as Ellie was telling, is very smart. It knows how to jump oceans and not yet affect the farmers who are really nearby.
Why is that?
And sorry?
Why is that? What's the explanation for this?
Oh, okay. So I'll get to this explanation. Yeah. So this, yeah, that's a very interesting question. Yeah. Explanation is something, yeah, it's difficult to imagine for most people, even me, because although I'm from India, I don't realize what's happening in India now. So this is happening everywhere. You see the spike at the same time. Mm-hmm. Well, the explanation is that, okay, before that, you see that all over Asia, it's kind of similar. It's not so pronounced, but it's still rising trend. And the explanation for that I'll get to that. Let's keep it a mystery. I didn't check the time. So if you want me to hurry, I'll just.
I think we have to hurry a little.
Mm. Okay. Well, the second point I want to make is that it's not only the increase of tests, it's also picking up seasonal illnesses, because this is a very badly designed test. So it picks up everything you throw at it. So So this is clear from Tokyo data. You have this in spring, you had this seasonal cold, because weather is kind of very unsteady and people catch cold. In summer too, we have the summer colds, because It's very hot and people use air conditioning a lot. And so these are seasonal illnesses and influenza too. So the PCR test is kind of picking up anything which you throw at it.
So is that the answer? Is the answer that the spikes are caused by mass testing, by increasing testing?
Yes, and seasonal illnesses
This coincides with what Dr. Vodak told us this morning when he said that if... This is what's happening in Germany. There's mass testing in the schools now. School children are to be mass tested. And he says if we have 10 million tests twice a week, then we get 500,000 false positives per week. So I assume that this is precisely what is happening in India when you're pointing to these spikes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Everywhere. Yeah, it's not only in India. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. And they are kind of exaggerated by the amplified. So they don't, you know, if you take the ratio of the test, like how much percentage is positive, it changes. Like it is strong in the spring and fall season and gets lower in summer, but there's a peak. So this is kind of, it's also catching the seasonal sickness. Mm-hmm. So it's not really just the increase of testing. That's the main factor. But within that, there's the small variations. Mm-hmm. So now let's get to India. So India, what's happening is that it's very hot in India right now. So we call it the summer season, but you know it's spring for most most people. And to imagine how hot it's close to 40 degrees in Delhi. And there's a huge variation. The nights are kind of cooler. It's a 15 degrees variation. So it's a huge. And what happens during this time is that people get mostly pulmonary, the chest in respiratory illnesses, due to different reasons. One is the unsteadiness of the weather. The other one is dust coming from desert. So Delhi especially has a lot of dust coming. So it's the hot weather and the dust. And so people are getting sick. And if you increase the testing, then it's going to, you know, show up more people. So this is the dust storm. So April 16, there was a big dust storm in capital of India. In addition to that, the air quality is very, very bad in Delhi. So Delhi is the worst in the world in terms of air pollution. And so both of these combine to produce pulmonary illnesses. And you can see that in India, most parts of India doesn't have any problem. I haven't shown any curves, but most parts doesn't have. And the death rates are really, really low. It's much below the suicide levels in Japan, like 15 people in a big city per year. And in some other parts of India, we have monsoon rains, but that's not a big issue. It's Delhi, which is the main problem. And as we discussed before, antivirals are now being widely used. They were not used earlier, like last year, but they are now. And people use like 6 shots of remdesivir. And when in Japan, they had a trial, about a significant portion had to stop the trial because they developed serious complications from like pulmonary problems, bronchial spasms, and also. So this is what people are taking for essentially a seasonal illness, which may be self-limiting. And in India, the media is very, very, they have raised a panic, and people are really panicked, and they are willing to buy this drug even from the black market. The other one is India has been using steroids too much, and they think steroids are good, but recently they have found out that it's not good because this is the biggest medical institution in India. So they are now kind of telling them, don't use steroids too much. So essentially what is happening in India is that it's a kind of a situation which has been caused by the PCR test and the panic by the media. And we have strong proof that there's no really pandemic going on, because otherwise, you know, these farmers who are protesting outside, they would have been massive catastrophe. And nor did Kumbh Mela, you know.
The religious festival.
And so what we can say about the Indian spike is that it's a seasonal sickness which has been leading to a tragedy due to medical mispractice, you know, aided by the PCR.
Yeah, but you know what? Same thing is true for Italy, Bergamo, and the same thing is true for New York, and probably for London as well.
Probably for most places around the world.
Wherever you have spikes, it's due to a combination of these factors that you just mentioned.
So that's what I have to kind of think. You asked me to tell about Japan. So Japan, I want to tell you, Japan is really fighting hard. One of the reasons is that Japan has a history of vaccine injury from the HPV vaccine, the human papillomavirus vaccine, that's cervical cancer. And although, you know, it's not very known outside, Japanese people, you have been in Japan. Japanese people are very kind of cooperative, and they do everything which the government says. But a few people, most of them kind of who have suffered some kind of injury by medical mispractice, they're beginning to wake up and they are kind of organizing in small groups and they are fighting hard. For example, my friend Sugimura-san kind of tries to translate a lot of information from your sessions to Japanese and a lot of information which is available in English. And the only academic in Japan who kind of really understands this is a pandemic is kind of Professor Ohashi, and he was one of the authors of the Corman-Thurston review.
Very good, yes.
And we have several...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so we have several politicians as well, so we are standing strong in Japan.
Very good.
Yeah. And then you probably know I work with Howard Stein, and yes. So that's my guru.
Mm-hmm. And, a good man.
And all
very
these
good
nice
man.
People, Paul and Ross. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so basically we're trying to kind of find ways through information technology, try to bring in people and, you know, and information. So I think Howard will kind of to inform you more about this.
Yeah. And
we try to do translation efforts, and we also try to contribute to HART, which is a medical organization in the UK, who's mm-hmm. medical professionals trying to fight against all mm-hmm. these measures. So that's all I have to report today.
Well, thank you very much, Saji-san. Totemo oishii desu ne.
Yokatta. Arigatou gozaimasu.
Water can't do any harm. Okay. Well, thank you so much. Yeah. This is...
Thank you for having me.
I think we needed this because there's so much confusion about India. And you you gave us really good insight into what's really going on. And it all makes sense. Also, it coincides with what we know from other countries and what we learned this morning by speaking to Dr. Vodak. Thank you so much, Saji.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.